Did I tell you about my eyeball?
You use it as an excuse as to why we didn't record earlier.
It was my dad's birthday? Yeah, it was his birthday on Sunday. And he wanted a pie instead of a cake. And so I bought him a coconut cream pie. They wanted to go in the TV room and watch it. And so he brought it in there and then proceeded to dump it on the carpet. I didn't want the dog to eat it. So I'm like, I'll get you another piece. I threw the thing away. I started furiously cleaning the rug. And when I stood up, all I saw were flashing lights on the periphery of my left eye. I went to the eye doctor on Monday because my retinas are kind of thin. I thought I was having a retinal detachment. And I do have a vitreous separation. And so I've got to monitor my visual field. This is so boring.
Pretend for 5 minutes not to be a nurse.
I don't want to go blind, so I'm trying to calm down.
Well, what was the problem?
It was a vitreous detachment. The part where these little strands attach to your vitreous. There's gooey stuff in your eye.
Okay, no. I think we're done.
Okay.
Okay, I'll see you next week.
Maybe you'll see me next week. You might see me.
I will. My eyes are, well, aside from lenses going to crap, my eyes are fine.
God.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, my Thanksgiving was mellow. We just hung out. I didn't make any kind of turkey, thank God.
Well, that's right. We went to Costco and there was none.
There was none, yeah.
What'd you have? Salmon? What did you have?
I didn't have salmon. I made an herbed chicken.
You sound excited about that.
Yeah, it was actually really good. And okay. I grilled up a bunch of vegetables and we had herb chicken and grilled vegetables and a big salad and it was very nice.
So you had a quiet Thanksgiving. You did all the cooking and cleaning?
Yeah, somewhat. Sucks. I always do all the cooking and cleaning. What's new? How was your Thanksgiving?
I know, but you should just get some Burger King or something so you don't have to deal with all that. Take a day off. It was great. I went to my brother-in-law's and there were 20 people there.
Oh, wow.
Which was about average. There's been more. There have been fewer.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Nice. And my... I guess I should call her my niece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I'm technically she's my niece. I don't understand family relations. I'll just give you a quick diagram. Maybe you can tell me what relation she is to me. My wife's brother's daughter.
Uh-huh.
So she's kind of like a niece, but I don't know what the legal term for that is.
I don't know if there is one.
She's like 25 she's early 20s. And she made a good point. She said she was thankful for coming to a family gathering that she enjoyed being at. Because she was saying that a lot of her friends of her age don't like going back to be part of family events because there's always one crazy uncle there spewing stuff that nobody wants to hear.
And you could have been the crazy uncle and you chose not to.
I actually said, hey, if you want me, I know all the stuff that they'll say. I can pretend to be one if you want. And she's, no, shut up, go away.
But it sounds like a wonderful gathering. I don't even have 20 people in my family, so that's wonderful.
Oh, it was extended. There were friends and whatnot. But it was, you know, they're also a big family.
That's nice. That's nice. I've never had that.
And growing up, I had the crazy uncle. Did you?
No. Mm-mm.
It seems like such a trope, but, you know, I definitely, yeah, there was Jerry, and he came over, and he would have some new crazy idea. He died years ago, but... So I don't know what he would be talking about now. I'd be a little afraid that he would have fallen down one of these conspiracy wells.
Right.
But he used to talk about his new great algorithm that could predict the stock market.
Wow.
He finally beat the stock market, yet the next year he seemed just as poor as he did the year before. So I don't know if it ever...
I don't know if he beat it.
I don't think he ever did.
I don't think he can beat the stock market.
He never really bothered me. I understand why people can be bothered by people like that, but I don't know. Maybe because I grew up with it. It was just a normal part, and I just knew not to take anything he said seriously, and then he was kind of off the wall, bonkers.
Right. No, my family was very small, and even when we were all together in Chicago, I think the extent of it was 8 people.
No, that's not too bad.
No.
But you really, I think it's good to have exposure to crazy people. I mean, what would happen? See, right now, if Trump showed up at your door, you'd have no idea how to handle him.
I would just shut the door.
And that's rude. That's just rude.
Doesn't matter. He doesn't care about people, so.
Well, he cares about what people think of him.
Oh, well.
So he cares about the thoughts in their head. He just doesn't care about the people.
Right.
But, you know, if he showed up here, I'd know how to deal with him. I'd just put him on the corner and I said, oh, that's so interesting. Really? Oh, where did you learn about that? Has that been going well for you so far? Well, maybe next year it'll be all right.
You talk to crazy people.
Exactly.
Speaking of crazy, there's a lot of crazy.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Obviously, there's a lot of crazy conspiracy on the right.
Mm-hmm.
It all seems to come from the right, though.
Why is that?
I don't know. Is there crazy conspiracy stuff on the left that I'm missing?
You know, I actually kind of thought about that yesterday when I was washing dishes. Where is this stuff coming from? And is anyone countering any of it with other crazy?
Oh, well, not other crazy. They're just trying to debunk it, which is a totally futile effort because they debunk it, but no one listens to debunking, and the debunking takes so much time that by the time they've debunked one thing, there are, you know, three or four more lies.
Right.
On to the next thing. I mean, this is Trump's playbook, is that he just keeps lying, and you never can catch up with his lies.
It just seems that there's no bottom to the craziness, and you can't even predict where it's going.
I can start to predict it. I mean, it's pretty clear now that if there's any bad news out of Ukraine or from the finance, any bad news, especially if you can link it to Ukraine, it doesn't even need to be like a real link. You drum up a fake link with Ukraine and then you blame Biden for it. So you just take whatever bad news is in the day, draw some crazy link to Ukraine, completely fabricated, and then link it to Biden. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the reality. You just take the bad news and link it to Biden.
Right.
In social media news, you know, the whole Elon Musk taking over Twitter thing.
Yes, yes.
All these guys in the tech elite have been warning about doom and gloom for Twitter. It's going to go down. It's going to have massive outages and whatnot.
Right.
I haven't seen any of that yet. You know, it seems like it's still chugging along pretty well, even though they fired everyone.
Yeah, they fired everyone and then let people back on platforms. But now, is it yay or ye, whatever?
It's Kanye West, formerly known as EY. Y-E? I don't care. I'm just trying to insult him now.
Yeah, I guess he's off the platform now again.
Yeah, it's watched because apparently you're not in vogue.
Yeah, I never knew they were in vogue ever.
Oh, in the 40s, yeah, you couldn't get enough of them.
Oh, you couldn't get enough of them. The swastika actually was a Buddhist symbol.
Yeah,
but I think
it's the other way.
It turned the other way, yeah.
I studied Hitler in high school.
Uh-huh.
I actually read his book, and I don't know why I never dug into or had an explanation as to why he came up with that flag.
The only explanation I've ever found, and I don't have a source document for this, is that the way the Buddhists draw it is in alignment with nature, and the way they flipped those little flippers on the top of it.
Flippers.
It's,
the arms.
Yeah, the arms. It's not in alignment with nature. So it's like a destructive pattern in terms of a productive one.
It's not like he's a Buddhist. I thought that was from Hindu.
No, I think it was one of the Buddhist. Well, there's like 12 symbols.
I think it's Buddhism.
I think it is.
I could be wrong, though. Let's make something up.
Yeah, let's just call it Buddhist and be done with it. But it has something to do with alignment with nature.
No, it's Biden. It's actually each arm represents one of the Biden family members. And so they line them up. And they put them in a wheel, and that is the white shows that he's a white supremacist, and the red shows the blood of the babies that they're drinking. So it's a Biden flag.
Oh.
See how easy it is to come up with a conspiracy theory, a right-wing lunatic conspiracy theory.
Oh, my God. I hope this doesn't go viral.
You just pepper in Biden throughout the whole thing and
okay,
make it look bad.
Got it. Okay. Well, and any Buddhist listeners, like, correct us. Let me know if you have any.
Don't correct us. You know we're wrong. We don't have to be corrected when we're wrong.
Correct
when
us
we
because we're
wrong.
So wrong. And let us know the genesis of the meanings. Go ahead.
So Catherine.
Yes. Yes, sir.
How is artificial intelligence changing art history?
I don't think it's changing it. I don't think you can change history, can you? I guess you can. Revision.
I didn't understand. Honestly, this is the article from Hyperallergic. Hyperallergic. Okay, I can't read. That was the title of the article. So it's kind of clickbaity, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think that they made a case for it changing art history. I think they made a case more for it to be incorporated into art history to some extent.
Well, that changes it then. But then every new artwork changes art history.
Right.
I will say this. I didn't particularly care for the article, as I hate most articles because they're not as smart as I am. thank you. But author Verity Babbs broke down AI pretty nicely. I thought she did a pretty nice breakdown before going off the rails and talking to artists and stuff. But then that's always what happens when you talk to artists. But Verity Babbs, what a name.
I like it. You know, she opens the article by saying, and I'll quote the article, "People get up in arms whenever the hand of the artist is detached from the final artwork."
Do they, though?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I don't know. I think somewhat. You know, and then she talks about photography and Pollock and now AI. I think that's kind of, how I felt about AI initially. It's like, is it art? Like, if there's no one painting or drawing or sculpting or whatevering.
You got up in arms about the lack of arms?
I guess, yeah, to some extent I did. And now I'm over it.
So it's just a knee-jerk reaction about arms. So it's a whole body reaction, really. We're talking about arms and hands and knees. Mm-hmm.
If there's not someone doing it, expressing themselves, you know, then it's kind of like that whole thing. We've talked around this a lot. But it was the same thing with photography. It's like, how could that be art when you're just taking a picture of something, right? But photography is an art form.
Yeah, well, that was the problem. She starts off saying interesting things about AI, but then she talks to a lot of dumb people and quoting dumb people saying dumb things. That was the basic problem. Most painters throughout history don't paint their own stuff. You know, they have underlings paint a lot of their work, or start it off or finish it off or whatnot.
Ceramist, and too.
Jeff Koons, who just sits behind his minions as they Photoshop for him. He's directing it kind of like I direct Dolly or Midjourney or something.
The way I looked at the article, you know, I was thinking about stuff that we've talked about. And we talked a lot about how much I came up with the term prompter. I don't even know if that was, like, the prompters, like when they're prompting these AI, you know, whatever.
Inputting the text.
Yeah, we bemoaned, do they even know anything about art history? Do they know anything?
The preposition was, the more you know about art history, the better prompter you can be.
The better prompter you would be. But this takes it, like, kind of out of that realm, and it actually looks at testing AI's knowledge of artistic styles. That was one of the premises. And so it kind of flipped it a little bit. And so to me, like, the overriding question for me was, what does Dali understand about art history?
The quote from the article, in speaking about works created by AI, they ask, why would we add them to the history of art? Dali is remaking all that has already been. Well, that's all of art, though.
Right, that is all of art. And they also talked about the images from these databases not being neutral. And the premise was that it was the byproduct of the white male gaze.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe some bias, and maybe some bias.
Welcome to the history of the world.
Yeah, history of the Western world, at least, right? At least the Western world, the whole world, probably. But, you know, the bias was infused due to, like, the content moderators and the technical experts who developed these programs.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah. So anyway, so I thought it was an interesting point that she brought up, that a lot of recent works, you know, they were saying, like, if they start searching and their ability, I guess we could regroup. When they would put prompts in for various eras of art, they got better prompts for, like, Impressionism.
Well, Impressionism's a bit of a low-hanging fruit.
Exactly, because of the airy brush strokes and different things. But they were kind of hypothesizing that if there's historical bias, that more recent works would be missing due to copyright issues, and older works would be missing because of lack of exposure. That's what they were talking about, the curating of these databases, you know, and in terms of the images they were pulling together.
Right, but the more modern databases aren't going by any rules, so they're stripping any images that are on the internet, whether they're copyrighted or not. And they're going to be finding, it's going to be pretty easy to find old archived images from museums from a lot of the older works.
Yes.
I don't know if that holds water.
So should it be added to art history? I say yes. I think it ultimately
will be. It is. Yeah. It's part of it now.
So I was looking at this MoMA collection, and an artist, Refik Anandal, has been using machine learning to interpret MoMA's collection. And I thought that was interesting. Did you check that out at all?
Oh boy, did I. Yeah, you missed the NFTs, though. He's doing NFTs of them as
I kind of wanted to skirt over that. Yeah, okay.
I think we should preface, though, this article is from just about a year ago.
Right.
Which seems like it's pretty modern, but in this world of NFTs and AI-generated art, that is like a whole generation ago, or two.
Yeah, probably two generations ago. I just thought it was interesting that they were trying to use it to interpret the collection.
Right, and he has a show called Unsupervised, which I thought was a kind of clever name. And the idea was, he was taking the text that described the works and feeding that text into AI generation machines, image generation machines, and seeing what he could get out. And I thought that was a pretty clever thing to do. And he's been working with these things for a while now, so he's kind of an old hand at this, which is, you know, he's been working with it for 5 years, so he's a grandmaster of AI.
Right.
It did go off the rails pretty quickly, though, as most articles do, especially when crossed with technology, because part of the subtitle is, you know, the machines hallucinating, which is like, do electric sheep dream, which is an obvious knockoff. So that was a bit disappointing, but you know, I don't think you can, this may be a minor quibble, because hallucinations in this realm just conjure up some magical thinking, I guess, but the machines don't hallucinate because they don't think, and I don't think if you don't think that you can hallucinate.
I don't think you can.
It just seems like dumb art speak. On the other hand, maybe it's just poetic. Maybe I'm being too hard.
Let's take the poetic and go with that. Yeah, so what did you come away with this? Because I just, do hallucinations tell us something we did not know?
Most of the article was gibber, art speak gibberish.
Mm-hmm. It was.
There are a few good points, and there are a few points I think we can are worthy of talking about because of the ways in which we can deconstruct them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things was Anadol said, it's very Newtonian thinking. If you know how it started, can you predict where it may go? And that's an interesting concept because it's, you know, it is basically a fundamental philosophical issue with Newtonianism or the idea of predeterminism, right? Mm-hmm. Are we all just machines that are just responding to stimuli on a mathematical formula? As a white male objective person, I learned on TikTok that my objective viewpoint isn't really objective. It's just another bias.
Oh.
Actually, I thought that was really interesting to point out because I was like, oh, I thought I was objective, but maybe not.
So is all objectivity bias or is it just because you're a white male?
No one really is objective. So it's all bias. Mm-hmm. But this creator on TikTok was pointing out that there's a certain strain or flavor of objectivism that seems to be very particularly white male.
I did not know that.
So I'm a white male objectivist. And most of my friends are going slowly crazy by falling into conspiracy theory holes. How it comes back to AI is, well, it literally is a mathematical algorithm that is generating it now. So are we a mathematical algorithm too? It just all kind of opened up some interesting concepts. But then that goes on to do to cover more stupid crap. It goes from that momentary glimpse of genuine intellectual interesting things, something interesting, genius, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then another quote from Andals. As humans, we think about how we learn and recollect our memories or where our consciousness comes from. We realize that the machine's process is not so different from our thinking or imagining. You went from saying something interesting and unique, or not initially unique, but you went from something interesting and connecting it to this AI field, the Newtonian thing. And then they said something completely stupid. And I say that because you can't really make a connection between the way the AI is thinking and the way we think, because we don't know how we think and we don't know how the machines think. That's the whole problem with the AI, is that they're training themselves on models and we don't understand that process.
How do they train themselves? And to break it down for me, it's like if we kind of created AI, wouldn't AI have our bias anyway?
Not necessarily, because we don't know how it's working.
Oh.
They create an algorithm and they put the algorithm onto a database and they tweak the algorithm, but they don't exactly know how A gets to B.
Oh.
Does it go through Z before it gets back to B? Old programming, you knew exactly what was happening. Every step would create a specific response. But when you're tweaking an algorithm, you don't exactly know how it's working.
I guess I just don't even get that.
Yeah, you can't predict the outcomes.
Okay.
They go on to say more silliness.
Mm-hmm.
He said he saw something, this is a couple of years ago when he's looking at the very first AI systems.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something in them that had never been seen before, something that was completely unexpected. And I was looking at the images that he was referring to, and it struck me as, okay, that's a weird thing to say, because when I look at those images, the specific ones he's talking about, I see cubism. It didn't look new to me at all. It looked like something that Duchamp could have done, but I digress. Maybe he needs to do a little more art history research. Going back to our earlier point is, the more art history you know, the better prompter you can become.
Is that what we're calling it, prompter?
That's what you started with, so I don't have any better.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't really like it, but it's better than anything I've come up with.
I don't really like, yeah, I hear you. I couldn't tell if the title was clickbaity. I thought they were going to actually interpret the collection. Did they interpret the collection?
He does, but they don't make any direct connection with it in the article.
Right. Yeah, I was waiting for some grand moment.
They have a number of images in the article that are from his show, but they don't directly talk about them. So you don't really understand the context of them.
Right, because I couldn't understand, like, were they AI-generated images collated from the collection?
Right.
So that's what, okay.
That was the most disappointing part of the article, is that the headline says one thing. They're going to talk about the show. that uses the MoMA data, and then they show the images from that show, but then they don't explain them. They're just left adrift.
Right, I felt adrift with this.
Yeah. The other guy they were talking to, Reese, goes on to say, and I think the blockchain allows the image to be as mobile as it was before. Everybody has access to it all the time. But also, you can point to one instance of the data or a reference to that, and that becomes something that somebody can collect. What do you think about that?
Every time you start talking blockchain, my head just goes poof.
So blockchain is just the ability to take some digital ones and zeros, and square them off and say, this is, and what's the word? Register them, I guess, is a way of putting it. You look at a block of ones and zeros and you say, this particular block of ones and zeros is set in stone. It could be a contract or it could be whatever it is. It's like, because you can make infinite copies of that ones and zeros, but this particular one has been verified and locked.
I see.
We know what we're talking about when we're referring to this particular, quote, block.
So are they saying you can view the image at any time?
Oh, well, that's the thing, right? Because these are all digital images that we're talking about that are being generated by the AI.
Right.
So it's all digital, which means it's completely interchangeable. One set of ones and zeros that describe this work is exactly the same as the next set. You can copy infinitely. You can make infinite copies of these things. But the blockchain says, okay, of these infinite copies, there's this one copy that we can point to as, quote, the original or as something that you can collect.
I see. Okay.
But I saw that as being a really stupid idea because, again, there's no difference between this block of ones and zeros and the other block of ones and zeros that are describing the same exact thing. It just seems like they're desperately trying to hold on to some concept of ownership and capitalism for their own, I guess, financial reasons.
Right.
Because it just doesn't matter.
The whole NFT art thing, like getting back to even our first discussions about this, it just kind of leaves me cold. Because to me, there is just something we talked about, like the, you know, viewing an actual piece versus viewing something online. And I struggle with that. Like when we do the podcast, most of the images we're looking at, you know, they're obviously digital. We're reading about them and looking at things and commenting, you know. But if I was to go to any art museum, I'd have a completely different experience. And it just becomes more real and more visceral. And so that's me, though. That's my bias.
That's part of the art form, though. If it's digital, it's going to be consumed digitally on a phone or a tablet or projected onto the side of a church. Who knows what? Whereas your point, I think, is stronger when we're talking about physical works that we're just seeing digital representations of. If we have a photograph of an ancient sculpture and that photograph isn't particularly good, we can be heavily influenced on how we feel about that work by the bad image we see of it. And I guess the best example I have is the mid-Italian Renaissance painters never held any interest for me when I was studying them. They were flat, right? They were better. They were much more realistic than early Renaissance, but they weren't nearly as realistic or as emotional as late Renaissance. And then when I actually was in Italy and I saw a whole load of these things, just one after the other, it really blew me away because what we miss in the digital reproductions is the detail.
Yes.
Viewing a painting like that in real life is very different from viewing it digitally. You can't replicate it.
So you're saying that when you can replicate it, when it's digital to digital, that's the platform, that's the media, basically, that it's your experience wouldn't be any different if it was hanging on a wall.
Well, it would be different, right? And then you're translating it into a physical form, or if you happen to be looking at it on a really crummy low quality screen versus a really nice high end screen. So it's still going to be varied, but that's just part of the problem with digital.
Well, but, you know, I think of your work, James, because you do a lot of work digitally, but I really love your work.
Thank you.
And like 3 years ago when we did that, you know, our final foray at Meditative Arts.
Our first and final?
It was the first and final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, but I really was taken with the wall of art that you created. Equally as much as I was with your nudes and some of the other things that you had hung later. And so
the nudes were in there. I had some digital nudes as well.
Right, but then you had other nudes, like you had done a show after that.
Oil paint. I had some oil paintings and stuff.
Yeah, some oil paintings. Yes. Which I thought were just amazing. That's the only way I saw your art initially was in life.
Well, to be fair, even though most of the work in those shows I created digitally, I knew that my output was going to be physical. I was going to print them. I knew how I was going to print them and who I was going to have print them for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I already had that in mind. So I don't know how much that impacts. I think that does impact how you make it and how you view it.
Right, because I didn't sense any flatness. Like what I'm talking about is like some of these images that I'm looking at. Like you're talking about like the kind of the washing of it, like the flattening of it with the mid-Renaissance. Mm-hmm. But that happens even with the other images. But I didn't get that with your work. So maybe that explains why. So that's an interesting concept.
Have you compared it with the digital, you know, viewing them digitally?
I don't think I've ever seen your stuff digitally, have I?
You can certainly look at my Instagram account and find them.
Oh, I did. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, they just looked familiar to me, you know, but I didn't make any comment in my head about it.
Yeah. When you create digitally and you know you're going to output them, I think there's a lot less lost in the translation.
I see. That's interesting. I just like that at the end, the guy just said, I'm going to make t-shirts.
Yeah, the banana verse. They were talking about creating a whole new banana. I don't want to get too far into this, but
no.
They couldn't figure out how to describe the work they were talking about. So they were, one of the things that they were talking about was the AI. This is one of the interesting parts of the AI.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the only interesting thing they said, or the most interesting they said,
okay,
is that AI is connecting the ideas, and the ideas is based on the database they have of objects, of digital images. They're connecting these ideas and these objects in a timeless manner without any kind of nostalgia associated with it. So if you could have a vision of like the entirety of art history, if you can hold that in your mind.
Right.
And they're all digital images, so they're kind of flattened anyway. The AI is able to look at that as one big block without any nostalgia, without any connections that we would have as humans. That's one of the most interesting things. I hadn't really thought of it that way. One of the reasons AI generation, it can be kind of weird at times, is because it doesn't have our nostalgia attached to it. So there's a whole level of thinking that it's just not applying. So it's, one might say, more objective.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe psychotic, maybe?
Psychotic.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes the images are.
Yeah. I think that was the most interesting thing to take out of it, is that the AI is able to look at it, I guess, dispassionately or without emotion.
Like look at the aggregate dispassionately and then pull out what they need to pull out.
Yeah, it can look at a mid-Renaissance painting just equally weighted and alongside and on top of something from the Impressionists or Dadaism or, you know, medieval, pre-Columbian, pre-whatever, you know, whatever you want to find. It's just being able to mash that stuff up without any preconceptions.
Interesting.
It kind of reminds me the idea when books started being published and they started publishing like encyclopedias, and you'd have the index page, right? You'd have the index page, which would list all the topics in the book. And you suddenly, people were seeing all these different things that were listed right next to each other for no reason other than they were in alphabetical order.
Mm-hmm.
When people saw unusual things put together next to each other, it would generate new ideas. And so AI is kind of like that.
Okay.
AI is smashing up these indexes without any concern for the order or any other considerations that they might have, cultural, nostalgic, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And back to the other point, is AI going to change art history? I think there is probably some room for dispassionate interpretation.
Well,
why not?
It's part of art history now.
Yeah, it is part of art history, and it's
going to change it.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, looking at that article title, I thought it was going to be changing our understanding of art history or changing some of the facts or the way we looked at older works. And I don't think that may be what was getting at. Maybe I was just misinterpreting that.
I think I misinterpreted. A lot of these titles are clickbait, and then you get into it and it's not exactly what you thought. But
I think you can reorder the question or reorient the question as to, will AI art become part of art history?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just something that isn't part of that art scene?
I think it is part of art history right now. And I think it will be. It may be.
Oh yeah, yeah. No,
we've
answered
aside.
That question. I was just trying to reorder the
reorder
the
article
to make more sense because.
Okay.
I think we may have misconstrued it, or Mr. Construed. I don't know.
Mr. Construed.
I don't want to gender construing.
Gender Mr. Construed. I don't want to take that too far.
I didn't. That's all I want to say.
Well, on that note,